on 98 FM and online. This is Phoenix FM.
It's John Dean Cox again. This time he's in. At the second time of asking, Dean Cox takes Leighton Orient a step closer to Wembley.
Carroll. Jonathan Tahue. Capable of anything. Tahue! Equaliser for Leighton Orient.
We're not a city, we're not a town. We're the only one of us around, and you know where we can be found. When Saturday comes again, we'll be trying to do our best to cheer on those on who wear the vest. Whatever challenge, whatever test, we're Leighton Orient from E10. Leighton Orient from E10.
Right, good evening everybody, welcome to another edition of the Orient Hour on Phoenix 98 FM, and we're joined in the studio tonight by Jaden Christie. How are you, sir?
I'm good, mate. Good evening, everyone.
Good evening, and get right into that mic, Jaden, will you, and so to Tony Smith. How are you?
Evening, Andy, evening, Jaden, evening, everybody out there.
That's it, I'll just turn your mic up, and it's a bit of volume, you see.
Evening, everyone, again.
There you go, and hopefully, on the end of the line, all the way from Edinburgh, is Matt Lockwood. How are you, Matt?
I'm all good, how are you guys?
Yeah, good, 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 not too bad, not too bad. So, what's been happening in Lockwood world, is the question?
Sure, what hasn't been happening in Lockwood world? to be fair, it was... nothing too exciting. I think, I can't remember the last time we spoke. It wasn't that long ago, was it? But
it's longer than you think, actually. And I came up to see you, and you'd been taking the Montserrat job, which hadn't had a game at the time, and obviously you had a couple of games with them, and that phased out, didn't it?
Well, no. So I was the technical director of the Montserrat FA, and I still am. Then obviously so I'm still doing that. And at the time, the president asked me to sort of take charge of the team. And then Lee Bowyer became available. So they sort of, approached him via one of the players, because one of the players in the squad used to play for Lee at Charlton at Birmingham. And, he's been out of work for a couple of years and he fancied it. So, They sort of moved swiftly to bring him in, and it was one of those where I just sort of stepped back and carried on doing the technical director stuff that I was doing anyway. So it was it was fine by me, to do that. And then it's just a case of doing what needs to be done off the pitch to try and improve things on the pitch, and that starts from grassroots level over in the Caribbean on the island. With Montserrat, you've got loads of players based in the UK that qualify to play for them. So it's just a case of just trying to, find the links with their family tree, and to find out whose, parents or grandparents were from Montserrat, and then try and find out if they will come and play for you. Because that's the tricky part, especially when you have young lads that are playing at Premier League clubs. They probably, or not probably, I know for a fact they don't want to drop down in their eyes, drop down to that level, because they think they might still be able to play for England or, a bigger nation potentially. So it's, sometimes it's a bit of a waiting game. But I think with bringing Leon, he's a big name. He's caused a bit of a stir over in that neck of the woods, as it's a bit of a coup to get him. And when he rings the players, they're like, "Oh, okay, this is a little bit different." Having a manager of a Championship pedigree, obviously when he played in the Premier League, and we've seen we see these these players, you know, likes of your Lampards, your Rooneys, your Gerrards, that go and get these jobs. But they do come with that reputation, don't they? And lads are like, wow, yeah, they are impressed by that. Then it's down to the manager to then go and impress the players, and the information they give them has to be correct. Otherwise, they'll soon lose the dressing room, as we've seen with some of those guys I've just mentioned. But yeah, you know, the players that maybe were sitting on the fence about coming to play, they've now started to come and play, and it's just going to make the team better and stronger. So it's all good.
So your actual job now, what is your actual role there?
So I'm the technical director for the Montserrat Football Association.
Right.
So I'm sort of so I'm just trying to improve things off the pitch, and I go to a lot of FIFA meetings. I'm constantly travelling. It sounds glamorous. I was in just before Christmas. I was in Mauritius. Then I was in Barbados. And my wife, and the kids are saying to me, "Oh, Daddy, you're just going to all these lovely, wonderful places." And I'm like, "Yeah, but I'm going. And I'm sitting in a classroom from 8 a.m. till 6 p.m. It's not glamorous at all, and I have to sit on an aeroplane for 12-13 hours to get to these places just to sit in a classroom and look at the sunshine out the window. So it sounds a lot more glamorous than it actually is, but it's good, and I'm making really good contacts from all over the world now. It's all for me. I love networking, I love meeting new people, and the guys I'm meeting now are really, really interesting, and it's opened up loads of doors.
Yeah, I mean, because when we met up in a hotel in Scotland, we was having a chat, and you were under no illusions how difficult the job at the time was going to be. You did take a couple of games yourself, so that must have been a really good insight into just how difficult it's going to be.
Yeah, and the two games that I was in charge of, it was brilliant. I brought Craig Easton in as my assistant coach, and he loved it. And he was really disappointed when the president sort of said that Lee Bowyer was available, because Eastie then knew that his sort of time was up, and it was only two games. But the players, they're an honest bunch of players. They haven't played at the highest level. They don't claim to be world beaters. But what they are is they have got a great team spirit, and that real camaraderie between them, where they just want to do well and win and just put the best performances in they possibly can. And they travel a long, long way to get to these these games. And it is a slog to get there and get back, but they come for every game, and I think you can sort of see results improving. And even the two games that I was in charge for, we had quite a threadbare squad because we had quite a few injuries, and I think one of the lads, his wife had just had a baby, so he couldn't come. They give their all every time because they're proud to represent the country. And it's fantastic to see. And even though, the island itself has got a population of less than 5,000 people, you look at it and think it's unbelievably small, but, these guys, take time off work because majority of them have full-time jobs. They make that effort to represent their country, and it's brilliant to see. I think now with Lee in charge and the recruitment drive that we're doing, and we're really trying to sort of promote the fact that we're doing things as professionally as we can, hopefully the other players that do qualify come out and do it. Because if we could get everyone that qualifies to play for Montserrat actually on the pitch, we would have a really good team.
Yeah. So what else is on the horizon for you at the moment then? Because you're still doing your football commentaries, aren't you?
Yeah, still doing that. Yeah, I did loads of games before Christmas, so they kept me busy. I had an email of thanks from Phil Parry just before Christmas, just saying, "Matt, look, we sent you here, there and everywhere, and you clocked up the miles." But I really enjoy it. You're going and watching Premier League football, and I went and did an Orient game. I did the Orient trip to Carlisle, which was a local game for me, even though it's a bit of a trek for the Orient fans, and it was great to go to watch Orient. I mean, I haven't seen them play this season. I probably haven't seen them play live for, I can't remember the last game I covered for the BBC with an Orient game. But, you know, it was really good to see them. Obviously bumped into a few sort of faces walking into the ground, which was lovely to see some old Orient fans that remembered me. There was quite a few that walked past me that didn't have a clue who I was, and I was like, "Hang on, boys." Yeah, bear in mind, they were probably about 2 years old when I was playing, so they would never remember an old fart like me. But you know, yeah, no, I've been doing loads of games. I probably did maybe 7 or 8 games in December. I was sort of every weekend I had 1 or 2 games on, so it was great. You know, I really enjoyed that side of it, and I'm still running my golf holiday business, Scotland Golf Holidays. So yep, still organising golf tours for people coming to Scotland. So yeah, I'm keeping busy.
Well, I mean, Orient are up there to play Hearts, aren't they, in the summer? So is there any additional games going on? Do you know? Have you been asked to do anything?
I haven't. I didn't even know that game was on. Is that like pre-season friendly, is it?
Yeah. It's a special match for the because of the involvement in the First World War from both clubs. It's
I knew the link. So what you're saying to me is, Matt, you need to get fit to come and play in the game, seeing as it's only 10 minutes from your house.
So
I need to dust the boots off.
Oh, yeah. I'm sure they'll have you in on the commentary for that one, I think.
I could be a mascot, maybe. I'm going to be a mascot for the day.
Yeah, why not? Why not? I didn't know if they'd ask you to do Dundee. I didn't know if they'd ask you to get Dundee involved, but for another match.
No, like I said, they haven't heard about it yet. So, I'm not sure. But I'm sure near the time someone will probably be in touch to invite me along. Like I say, I could probably walk to Hearts Ground in 20 minutes, so it's really very local, so hopefully I will get an invite to go along. Even if I don't, I'll go along anyway.
Yeah, and I mean, we're going to have a chat in a minute on here once you've gone back to transfer windows, because we're in that time now where everyone's standing here with bated breath waiting for Orient to sign a player, and no one's been signed yet. So, you know, there's plenty of fans pressing panic buttons on the various forums. How difficult is it this time of year, both as a player and as a, you know, if you were a coach looking for these players to come in?
I mean, I think from the player's perspective, it's one of those, isn't it, where if you're not maybe in the team regularly and you want to get that regular first team football, then you're probably, you know, sort of on the phone to your agent to see what's out there and what opportunities are available. And I suppose then again, if you are playing really well and you think you may be getting a move to a bigger team, then it's an interesting time of year. But, you know, I think from a coach's perspective, it's a tricky one, isn't it? Because there's no point just bringing the player in or bringing players in for the sake of it. Unless you can find a player that will improve your team and improve your squad and maybe fill a gap that you've got. If you've got maybe a couple of long-term injuries, or maybe you need a striker to come in and score you 10 goals to get you in the playoffs or to get you promoted, then I understand it. But just because the window's open, it doesn't mean you should sign anyone. For me, you know, I've always been a big believer in, you know, only sign players that are better than what you've got. Don't just sign players for the sake of it, just because there's a bit of noise from the fans. Oh, we need to sign people, because you don't need to sign people. You just need to sign the right players. Ones that are going to come in and fit in with the, you know, with the, I suppose, the team spirit that you've built up, and you know, have the personality that you need to be a leader. And it's not easy, because, you know, at the end of the day, going out in the transfer market is quite difficult. But I think the way Orient are now in the transfer market and the due diligence they do with the players and the recruitment side of things, you know, that I don't think they leave any stone unturned. And, you know, even when I sort of have spoken to, you know, Matt Poulter and Ningy anyone else higher up the sort of like the food chain, that's what they pride themselves on now, to have these regular meetings about transfer targets and to be realistic and to sort of come up with a blueprint and stick to it, to say, right, this is sort of player we want, and these are the players that the manager's target, you know, has identified. Can we bring them in? And yeah, I mean, it'd be interesting to see who they do bring in, who what areas of the pitch they feel that they need to strengthen. But it's interesting. I mean, when you put Sky Sports News on, there's a lot happening. I mean, obviously, I know the majority of it's in the Premier League, but there's always something interesting to read about.
Hi, Matt. It's Jaden here. I've just got a quick question about your time at Orient, and if you like reflect on your time, like in the terms of a five-a-side team, who would be the best players you would include in your five-a-side team from your Orient career?
Oh, wow. Good question. So, for me, in goal would be Scott Barrett. So, I mean, and when the other boys listen to this, like the likes of Bezo and Gingard, they'll be like, well, or Glenn Morris, they'll be like, why didn't you pick me? But I think with Scott, I travelled in with Scott. He was in my car school. I got on really, really well with Scott. And he was, I think he was just a brilliant goalkeeper. You know, he was good with his feet. He, even though he wasn't the biggest, you know, he was an excellent goalkeeper. And we got him towards the end of his career, so we probably didn't see the best of him. And I don't think he probably had a career as high up as he should have done, probably because he wasn't the tallest. So, you know, bigger clubs would look at him and go, oh, he's only, you know, 5'11", you know, 6 foot with studs on. He's not that big commanding goalkeeper that they want. But in five-a-sides, I would go for Scott. Not obviously not now when he's, you know, probably nearly 60 or whatever, but yeah, back in his heyday. then who would I go for? So,
did you not include yourself in the back line, in the back two, maybe?
100%. I'd be the captain. I'd definitely be. I'd be first name on the team sheet, obviously. who would I have? For a five-a-side team, I would probably want sort of like the sort of like I would class the better footballers, you know, like the ones that were comfortable with the ball at their feet. You might have to go for a bit of a general at the back that would organise maybe a Dean Smith to be like that, you know, that wall that you need. I would probably have Joe Keith in it because out of all the left wingers that I played with at Orient, he was the one that I probably enjoyed playing with the most. We had a really good relationship off the pitch, which then I think showed on the pitch that, you know, if I would go on an overlap, you know, he knew where I was going to run. He would play me in. If then I did that, he would go and sit in for me. And even though the Orient fans would probably look at that and be like, that's a bit of a surprising decision, but that's someone I would probably have in my five-a-side team because he was great in training at those little games. So that's Scott, myself, Dean, and Joe, and then probably going to need a goal scorer. Who would I have as a goal scorer? I mean, Watsey was a great finisher. Again, probably the Orient fans wouldn't have seen too much of that. He was a good finisher. Obviously, Steely was a good little finisher. I mean, you had Simba, didn't you? In his prime, he was up there. You got Jabbo, you got Gary Alexander. You played with a few strikers. Who would I go for up front? I'd probably say Steely, actually, because he holds the ball up well. He had a few little tricks. And I only spoke to him the other day as well, so he's fresh in my memory to put in. And but, you know, again, on the subs bench, you have guys like Michael Simpson, who was a, you know, great footballer. Eastie was good. Sort of at the back, maybe like a Gabby Zakawani, someone like that. Mate Joseph on the right side. You know, we played with some really good players that I thoroughly enjoyed spending time out on the pitch with. So. Next time, give me a heads up that was going to be the question, so then I can prepare and come up with a list for you.
No worries. It sounds like a great team. Then who would you have to manage the team?
I think that would have to be Lingy. I had three managers, didn't I? So I had Tommy, Rushy, and then Martin. So obviously we had the most success under Lingy. Getting promotion and having cup runs and stuff like that, even though I really enjoyed playing for Tommy and Paul Clark. That was my, when I first signed for the O's, wasn't it? And they were great. It was one of those where you knew where you stood. Hey, they didn't like try and sugarcoat anything. And we had some good times under those guys as well. But yeah, I think with the most success was under Lingy and Smudge. So yeah, I would say Lingy would be the gaffer.
Okay, lovely, Matt. It's Tony here now. Thanks for your time at the Orient. The one thing that struck me, you coming on here today, is the game's probably changed a little bit in the 10 years or so since you've gone. I always thought of you as quite a great left-back, but quite a direct left-back. They knock it about a bit more these days and try and hold possession. Do you think you'd have been as happy playing the way they play now, or do you think it's not really changed that much, or do you think you'd have still stuck with your own ways?
I think, to be fair, the way the teams play now, just passing out from the back, I'd have loved it.
Yeah.
Like, so much, because that's all I was good at, really, yeah. Controlling it and passing it to someone in my team. Yeah. You know, and I think with the way teams set up, they really, you know, even now, like, you know, with the fullbacks going inside and playing in midfield, I mean, I used to be a central midfielder when I was a kid growing up. It was, I only moved to left back when I was 19. I was always a centre midfielder, so I had that in the locker anyway. And then plus they encourage your fullbacks to bomb forward even more now, don't they? So I'm you look at it, and I'm actually quite envious of the left backs or the fullbacks now, the way they play. I think I maybe was a little bit before my time, even though I did okay when I played. But yeah, no, I'd love to play now. But yeah, the way they play. Sometimes you have to watch it through, sort of like, you know, through your fingers. You're thinking, oh, don't pass that out with the goalkeeper giving it to midfielders on the edge of the box when they've got a man right behind them. But you know, that's the fashionable way to play now. But I would love that, because obviously that was you know, one of the strongest parts of my game.
Is it reflected in your coaching now when you get a chance to? I know you're talking about the classroom there, but does that come through when you get into coaching?
Yeah, it does. But again, for me, you know, it's horses for courses, because I think sometimes managers have this ideal way of playing, but if you haven't got the players that can play that way, then don't play that way. You know, if we went back to Orient with our promotion winning team and you had, you know, John Mackey and Gabby Zakawani as two centre halves, you're not going to play the ball out and give it to them on the 6 yard box, because that wasn't what they were good at. You know, they're not going to find a 40 yard diagonal pass to someone's feet, but they're going to tackle people and smash them into the rosette and not let anyone go past them. So I think, yes, every manager and coach has that ideal way of playing and they have a philosophy, but I think sometimes, depending what level you're coaching at and who you're coaching, whether it's an under 10s team, an under 18s team, or a, you know, a men's team in, you know, the Conference South, I think would relate to how you can play. Yeah, you know, if you go to Man City and you've got some of the best players in the world, yeah, of course you can do what you like. But I'd certainly think it's horses for courses. And I think the coaches and managers that don't change due to the players they've got are the ones that are then, you know, probably fail, because, you know, sometimes I just think, you know, you can't, if you want to play Route 1 and you've got 2 5-foot-7 strikers or one, you know, there's no point, like, smashing up to him hoping he's going to win headers, because you're not going to. You know, you have to play to players' strengths, and I think that's probably one of the sort of strengths of the top coaches. They actually see what you know, what their players can do, and then come up with a system and attack and tactics to suit that.
Yeah, and all we can say to you, Matt, is we wish you well in your role with Montserrat, and hope we'll hear you on the radio as often as possible. Always talk sense, and always good to catch up with you. We'll see you in Scotland if you're there in the summer, if we don't see you before. And just a very big thank you for joining us on the Orient Hour tonight.
No, my pleasure. It's great to speak to you guys as always, and yeah, hopefully see you up in Edinburgh in the summer.
Cheers, Matt. Bye now. Well, that was nice to catch up with Matt Lockwood, and we'll have a little chat in a moment or two, and then we'll be joined, hopefully, by Dean Cox as well. But let's just have Victor's view first of all, shall we?
With an enforced break, now is a very good time to reflect on where we are as a team, as well as the division as a whole. I'll start with those players who impressed me the most. I think that the quality of Solbrin's performances often goes without the recognition he fully deserves. For me, Lawrence Vigouroux, the toughest act to follow of all those who left at the end of the last campaign. Vig's not only a very special goalkeeper, also a huge and important presence in the dressing room. Sol, at a very different stage of his career and has a very different personality. The Unboa Loney, competent, focused and calm, often much calmer than I am when commentating on his close ball control in front of oncoming strikers. I'm sure it's just me showing my age. I grew up when goalkeepers were allowed to pick up the ball from a back pass. I wonder how the likes of Goddard, Jackson and Day would have managed with the expectations of not only being great shot stoppers, but also having the control to dribble and pass the ball. Before his injury, Jordan Graham was on his way to being my player of the season. He was getting better with every game. The quality of his crosses up there with the very best I've seen at Brisbane Road, and I've seen some greats. I'm looking forward to seeing Jordan return later in the year. The prospect of Graham and Najai in the same side is very exciting. Although Dan has also been a victim of a crawl injury, I've seen enough to know that he's an exceptionally talented striker. Ethan Galbraith has enormous potential. I think Richie understands him well and is carefully nurturing this skillful and confident young player who is learning his trade in a position that the O's boss mastered as a player. On occasions, Ethan can make the wrong decisions. We saw it at Fleetwood. But often those mistakes are the result of his ambition and creativity, and I'm looking forward to seeing him develop and flourish. Theo Archibald, clearly relishing the challenge to prove himself at the higher level. There appears to be an increased work rate to add to his pace and control. I think for the remainder of the campaign, it'll be about young players continuing to learn and develop, laying solid foundations for the future. A top 10 finish remains a realistic target. Portsmouth, the best team I've seen so far. John Massino has moulded a squad rebuilt in the summer into what was a settled and well-organised team, capable of finally seeing Pompey return to the Championship after 5 years of trying. Saturday will be a fascinating test because Pompey has slipped up recently, one win in five, struggling Cheltenham, coming from behind to win at the weekend. It's going to be a huge game for the home side and a real benchmark for the O's. There appears to be a growing gap between the top eight, the bottom eight and the rest. I expect in the closing weeks of the campaign there'll be some games where there won't be a lot riding on the outcome. At the wrong end, I fear for the future of both Fleetwood and Reading. So in conclusion, despite numerous injuries as well as illnesses which have denied Richie Wellens the opportunity to ever field his strongest 11, Leighton Orient have adapted well to life back in the third tier, and we have the potential to continue to develop in the new year.
Thanks very much, Dave Victor. Let's have this week's Roper's Rant.
When we set this feature up, we called it Roper's Rant. But actually, because we were doing so well last season, and not so bad this, there hasn't really been a real rant. And for those that know me, if I rant, I rant. Sorry, West Siders in rows A, B, C, D, E, F, G, H, I, J. You get the picture. This week, however, I'm on the warpath. First up is the FA Cup. The first week in January is a really special one in the English football calendar. Unless you got knocked out by Chesterfield, Hendon, Enfield, Margate. Yeah, you get the drift again. If you were a supporter of a smaller club in the lower two divisions, then you couldn't wait for the Monday following the second round of this once glorious competition. Tuning into Radio 2 at approximately midday in the hope that Leighton Orient's ball was matched with a big boy's ball. No jokes, please. What do we have now? The third round drawn at 12:15 PM on a Sunday, conducted by Dion Dublin and Lee Dixon, followed by a wealth of third-round ties selected for coverage in every country but England. The usual big teams selected for a Sunday slot as if it's a Premier League game. 15 different kick-off times over 5 days and hardly a first team in sight from anyone playing in the Premier League. Unless, of course, they're drawing against each other and don't have the bottle to rest squads against one of their own. The magic of the Cup has been eroded and this weekend saw it take another hit when a string of managers started calling for no replays whatsoever. First up, we had Thomas Frank of Brentford. He had a cheek. They had 80 minutes to beat 10 men and couldn't manage it in game one. Next up was David Moyes from that lot down the road. Well, he can take that idea back to his tax-funded stadium and get knotted. Add to that the new man in at Nottingham Forest, who, of course, following a draw against Blackpool, decreed that games should be settled the first time around. Where do these managers get off? We play more games in the EFL than the protected species of the Premier League. We have less money to spend, far less of a backroom staff, medical and science facilities to help injured players. Yet because we aren't at the top table, we have to play by their rules. It makes it even worse when some of these clubs have come from far more humble backgrounds. Had Thomas Frank been managing Brentford in the 80s or 90s, then he'd have loved the replay away at Old Trafford to help bolster the bank balance. And the fans, who to be fair, some have called him out, would have loved a one-off 90 minutes in Manchester on a rainy Tuesday night. The FA need, for once in their pitiful lives, to call this out. Stand up to the Jurgen Klopps and the Pep Guardiolas and show them who runs football. The problem is, the FA don't. And plans are already in place to scrap replays next season. Imagine that. Only 12 years ago, we had a magical afternoon at home to Arsenal, culminating in Tuhue being capable of anything, before out-singing 51,000 gooners in North London and bagging £1 million in the process. Think what that could do for a Maidstone. Well done to them, sadly, and the wheels are coming off at Stevenage. It could fund their losses for over a year. So the first rant of the year is here. Premier League managers, Premier League clubs and the FA, take your ideas about the world's oldest cup competition and shove them where the sun don't shine. And if you don't want replays, play your best side and do the job in 90 minutes. And if you do end up with a stalemate away at Fleetwood, then tough. Deal with it. Phew. Next up, I'm turning to the ticket price debate for the Bolton game. A week or so ago, there was a social media post pointing out that Bolton had charged those fans a tenner for the game before Christmas, yet we were striping them 29 sovs for the return as a Category A game. Don't get me wrong, I don't like categorising games, and 29 quid is too much, but had the original poster and subsequent fans from lots of clubs, I hasten to add, done just a modicum of research, they would have seen that the Bolton away game was a family day with ticket prices on fantastic offer. It's just as we do, football for a fiver, kids for a quid. Turns out that had that been a normal game, then we'd have likely been paying approximately £27. In fact, Derby going to Bolton are being charged £30, so the faux outrage for the Wanderers fans is a bit rich. I'm all up for a cap, although the daft argument made by some Nottingham Forest fan about we have a cap in the Premier League and you charging £29 is a disgrace is so far way off reality, it's a laugh. I pointed out that when you're in the Premier League and you bag a minimum 110 million quid, even for finishing bottom, then of course you could afford to cap prices. The daft idiot, as you can expect, didn't even respond and blocked me on what was Twitter. Get over yourself. Then this week, a couple of Bolton fans started bemoaning that we're only giving them 1,200 tickets. Well, firstly, if it's that bad and we're charging you £29 and you want a boycott, you don't need any more. We have a smaller ground, capacity just over 9,000, and away fans are allocated what we can give. OK, some clubs may well be able to bring more, but it is what it is, and we weren't all previous Premiership clubs who then had the ability to build 25,000 all-seater stadiums. As we have seen, when some of these so-called big boys hit League One, which was mainly the last time they were big when David Essex was topping the charts, some of their fan base really need a reality check. Yeah, you may have faced ownership problems, not quite as bad as we did, but get on with it. Stop crying. If you don't like it, exit the division in the right way. How's that for a rant? A double rant, in fact. Still listening? If so, I'll sign off this week with two pleas. First up, it's the fanzine again. It's still a nightmare trying to shift the copies we have printed. And please stick a pound in my begging bowl on a Saturday and buy a copy. We have a new issue out for our trip to Pompey and we'll be at home on sale again against Bolton. Come and find me. I'll guarantee it won't be the best pound you've ever spent, but it'll be close. Secondly, let's really get behind the team Saturday at Pompey and home to Bolton the week after. Here are possibly the two toughest fixtures we have condensed into 8 days. There's 1,000+ going to the coast, and that away end is great for acoustics. So get behind Welland's charges for 90 minutes. Let's get a famous win before turning Bolton and their poor hard done by 1,200 fans over the week after. Up the mighty O's!
Wow, what a terrific rant this week that was. And I don't know about you, Jaden. That's one of the best rants yet, isn't it?
Yeah, it's always good, isn't it? It's class.
Now, let's not have a rant. Let's have a chat. Let's have a chat with one of the crowd favourites of the last 20 years or so at the O's. Hey, it's always a pleasure to say hello to Coxie himself. Dean Cox, how are you, mate?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. Yeah, all good, all good.
All good. Now, what's been happening? We've read you, you know, you were doing so well with Burgess Hill, and all of a sudden it all came to a grinding halt. What went on there, Matt, I'm saying? I've been speaking to Matt Lockwood.
Yeah, long story. I'll try and keep it short.
No, you can chat away. You've got half an hour.
Obviously, we went in and, you know, they pretty much didn't have a team. So, we signed pretty much 14 new players and then added on with the better existing ones that were sort of already there. There was a massive project put in front of me, 3 years, to try and get promotion, which obviously excited me. And obviously being a player there, I went on loan there when I was 17. So there was a bit of a this sort of sentimental value as well of going back. I know a lot of people there. I obviously used to live in the area as well for 30 years. So, it felt right at the time. The chairman was voicing all the right sort of things that I wanted to hear. With certain signings, certainly backed me, maybe a little bit more than he would have liked. But, those players are certainly, repaid him already. Like you said, we started off the season okay. The remit was to finish higher than what they did the previous season. So, I mean, they were third from bottom. So they stayed up on the last game of the season, the following season. So, yeah, I think we were, they're still there now. We were 12th at the time. Mm. But the chairman wanted a new assistant manager, which in hindsight, probably I should have left then, if I'm honest, but hindsight is such a great thing. I obviously already had one. So, I wasn't comfortable with it at first. So I sort of said to him, look, I'm not too comfortable with that. Look, you've brought me in and, you need to back me and my team.
Yeah, I was going to say, it's like a confidence. It's an insult to you, really.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And I think, he's sort of trying to say about myself and the rest to be a bit more tactically aware, which, again, after that comment, I should have gone.
And what position did he play and who for?
Yeah. I think what for me it was, I invested a lot of time over the summer in getting all these players in. Yeah. And I didn't want to leave them. I wanted to try and battle on and keep doing what I really enjoy doing. And I do love being a manager. And it's quite funny, actually. I gave Russell a call. And I won't repeat.
I won't swear,
but it was certainly, look, Coxie, you've got to have a look at that. That's, if that ever happened to me, there's just no way. So obviously the new guy come in, who is actually the manager now, Gary Mansell, which, I don't have anything against him at all. I know he's a good coach. I've heard of him. I hadn't met him previously, only when we trained at the same time with the under, because he was manager of the 18s. It's obviously a difficult situation, and obviously you come in, and of course it was slightly awkward. I think there's no point in beating around the bush. As uncomfortable it was for us, I'm sure it would have been for Gary. And obviously the rest of my staff, Will, Steve and Ross, it was difficult dynamics. After 2 weeks...
It's suicide, isn't it? It's suicide for a chairman to do that. I mean, you've got a team of people together that you can work with in any business, not just football. You built a team of people. Someone's coming and going, I'll get rid of him and we're going to give you him. And it's that's not what I wanted.
It just changes the dynamics. And I think, like you said, I think you feel, you brought me in, that you obviously, you liked what I did previously at Lancing. And, being local, there's a lot of local players there now, which I was really conscious of trying to do. I think you get that extra 5-10%, especially at this level, Burgess Hill's level, that, you know, there's a bit more, like I said, for me being there, a bit more of a sentimental value of like I'm playing from a local team, I want to do well for them.
Yeah, what is it with you, Dean, and owners who think they can run the pick the team and tell you?
Yeah, I think what I've learned in a very short space of time, certainly, you know, this level, Burgess Hill's level, sort of step 7, and I think Burgess Hill's step 5, in those sort of, that it's more and more, more and more that it happens. You know, speaking to Sammy Moore, and you know, Sammy's done a few more jobs than what I have, and they certainly have a massive, massive influence. And I think the reason for being is it's their money. You know, so if they feel something, you know, a lot of chairmen's, you know, don't get me wrong, I'm not trying to say every chairman up and down the country are like that at this level, but certainly a lot more frequent and known than obviously in the professional game. Yeah. So yeah, like I said, so Gary was with us for 2 weeks and he phoned me and said, look, I don't feel comfortable, which was on the Sunday after a game. And then the Tuesday we had Sheppey United away. We drew 0-0, we should have won, but they're in the playoff spots at the moment, so not a bad result at all. And then obviously I got the phone call on the Wednesday to say about the performances. We had 3 draws on the trot, but again, you know, the remit was to be above where they were. We were comfortably well away from relegation. That was never going to happen. And obviously, Gary then took the job. So I think
has it dampened your enthusiasm though, or are you still up for it?
No, not at all. I think. Listen, I mean, I was able to live through the Bichetti. I mean, that's miles worse. You know, that, I can assure you, that was miles worse. I mean, this is really mild.
You don't say.
The only disappointing thing for me is I had a really good rapport with the players. And you know, we were building something. You know, we were mid-table, but there's still 20 odd games left, and you know, in specifically this league, anyone can beat anyone on the day. I certainly wasn't worried about being anywhere near the relegation. Like I said, it was a 3-year plan, so to stabilise the football club for one for the first year. You know, there was talk of new investors coming in, and the chairman saying there may be more funds, and obviously the remit would change. That's great. You know, I've lived that all my life. I don't want to be anywhere where there's no ambition. You know, we don't want to just sit there and be happy to, you know, plod along and not do anything. You know, that's not me at all. I think, yeah, like I said, the disappointing thing for me was the fact that, you know, he wanted Gary to come in. You know, we then opened, you know, we agreed to it, you know, don't get me wrong, a little bit by gritted teeth, but felt that it was the only way we could prolong us being there, because we really wanted to be there. You know, like I said, we invested so much time and effort, you know, and players there that obviously came to play for me.
Hi, Dean. It's Jaden here. I was just wondering, I hope you're doing well, mate, anyway. I was just wondering, what's sort of your ambitions and aspirations now that you've dipped into management and coaching? Where do you see yourself and what is the end goal?
Get back in as soon as I can. I just want to get back in. You know, I miss it. I've been going to games, our level, higher level. I just want to learn. Like I said, certainly hasn't dampened my aspirations of wanting to do it again. If anything, I've got a bit more fire in my belly to get straight back in. I think the only difference this time will be probably doing a bit more due diligence with the board, with the chairman, probably having more in-depth conversations in terms of a strategy and how you know, we sort of go forward. I mean, we did have them when I first turned up at Burgess Hill and come in, but obviously, you know, that first few months was fine, and then all of a sudden, you know, obviously the question of having Gary as part of the coaching team was sort of put on us. And like I said, at first it was definitely a no. I felt that it wasn't going to go away, So obviously embraced Gary coming in. And like I said, I haven't got a bad word to say against Gary at all. You know, he come in and he's a fantastic coach. And he did help me. But obviously, I think, you know, like I said, hindsight's a great thing. But I think once you've questioned your ability and your tactical awareness, and, you know, I don't like talking about it, but, you know, for someone that's played well over 500 games in the Football League, to not be tactically aware, you know, I've played under some great managers, obviously Russell being a great one, Harry Kewell, Mickey Adams, Mark McGee. So, you know, managers where I've learned a lot. And obviously playing those games, you know, I've played different formations, you know, the standard 4-4-2, 3-5-2, whatever it is, a diamond. I think probably should have taken that a bit more to heart than what I did. I was quite calm about it, probably mellowing in my old age. I think if it was done to me probably 10 years ago, he probably would have got a punch or something like that. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I took it like a pinch of salt, and because I was enjoying what I was doing. And I think, you know, it is different being a manager. It is different. And, you know, what I like about it is the control of everything and training sessions and the man management I really enjoy. And obviously I had one of the best with Russell. You know, he was able to get me on the straight and narrow. So, you know, I've learned so much in terms of that with players, and I got on well with them. And that was why it was so difficult. You know, the decision, the reason, probably the main reason for doing it was because I still wanted to be around the boys, you know, and I wanted to be a manager. But I think what I've learned is probably it would have been best to have probably said, look, you know, you obviously don't believe in us enough to move us forward. And, you know, it's not working, you know, it's not going to work. You know, Gary felt uncomfortable. But obviously, I think the fact that Gary was also named manager 4 hours after I left, it was obviously, you know, pre-planned. And, you know, I'm not stupid. You know, I've been in football my whole life, 20 years. You know, it could well have been sorted a week or two before. But, yeah, like I said, nothing against Gary. Obviously, you know, football is dog eat dog, and I know that more than most. You know, it certainly is. I think more disappointed with the chairman, with the vision. You know, we had ticked off the remit, so felt no need for any change in the management staff. And yeah, you know, I'm ready to go. You know, I want to get back in for sure.
I've got an Orient related question now, and I asked Matt Lockwood the same one. When you reflect on your time at Orient, if you could mould a five-a-side team, the perfect one, who would you include and why?
Oh God, I'm going to upset some people, aren't I? Ooh,
and would you include yourself in that as well? I asked Matt Lockwood. He said, "Yeah, he'd be captain.
Surely,
yeah,
surely.
You'd be.
Yeah, I wouldn't be captain. I'll put myself in it. It's different. I mean, striker-wise, that's got to be either Lisby or Mooney or both if I can get them in. But I'd have to have both. And probably, you know, the most gifted raw talent to come through probably for a long time was Moses Odebeji. Was ridiculous. Ridiculous. I remember practice matches, he'd run the length of the pitch and score a goal, and it'd just be like, what the hell's going on? You know, this is stupid. So, yeah, I definitely have Mo. I need a bit of grit in there, don't I? Stephen Dawson.
Yeah,
I'll have Dawson in there to smash a few people around. He didn't mind doing that. He was a great leader as well. He'd probably be the captain.
What about goalkeeper? Who would be in there?
Yeah, goalkeepers. I'm trying to think of my time.
Jamie Jones?
No. Fingers.
Who?
Fingers. Jones. Oh, God, no. Yeah, we did have some bad ones.
I mean, he's only there for a few games.
Yeah, it's got to be him. Winning. It's got to be him. I always remember a funny story. I tried to chip him in training, in a shooting practice. And he caught it and booted it and chased me around the Chigwell training ground. It was brilliant. Yeah, so definitely him. He was nuts, but what a good goalie. They have to be, don't they? They always seem to have a little bit of a screw loose. But shot stopping, he was fantastic. He was huge, wasn't he? He was an absolute beast.
Lastly, just thank you for some great memories, because that's my sort of childhood watching Orient, is your era. And I think, like, I'm trying not to fanboy too much, but you were my favourite growing up, and just thank you for some great memories.
Oh, no worries, mate. Yeah, I often think about it. It's, like I said, you know, Russ pretty much saved my career. You know, obviously released from Brighton, and, you know, I was looking for another club, and fortunately enough for me, obviously we worked with each other at Brighton, and he got the Orient job and showed that belief in me to come down. And yeah, I mean, those 6 years were the best of my career, obviously bearing one of the seasons with you know who, but the rest of it I absolutely loved.
Dean, it's Tony here. I'm sorry to hear about your troubles at Burgess Town, because I remember talking to you in the summer, and I know how enthusiastic you were about it then. But
yes.
the only thing that struck me listening to you is your next step or whatever. Has it got to be managerial, or would getting in
no,
a lower level?
No, it doesn't have to be. No, listen, I think,
sort of thing, yeah.
Yeah, I think anything involved in football, listen, you know, I've done a lot of coaching and obviously managing. I like both. You know, it's just something involved in football, of course. You know, I gave so much in my playing days that it'd be great to be able to sort of relay that all back and help. So wherever that would be, you know, whether it's youth team level or first team level, whatever it may be, you know.
You put something online about getting your boots back on. Was that a joke, or was you...
Yeah, that was a joke. I mean, right. To be fair, I sent that tweet out, and I must admit, I did have...
You had some offers.
I did have some offers. Within an hour, I had five offers to play again, which in the Burgess Hills League and a couple above. So,
how fit are you, Dean? I mean, you're not down to the two-speed slow and stop stage yet, are you?
No, not at all.
No,
I think for me, it's obviously playing at a good level. To I wouldn't want to. I think you know when you're done, if you know what I mean. I was at Worthing, and I remember going back to pre-season, and I mean, bearing in mind we only trained twice a week, and we did a few runs, and after that, my legs were hurting and recovery was nowhere near as quick, and you know, I was missing sessions, and I was thinking, you know what, I don't really want to go out like this, because the previous season we had won the league with Worthing, and now they're obviously in National League South. So it got to a point where, you know, I didn't want to undermine everything I sort of done. I mean, don't get me wrong, I could kick a ball around for sure, you know.
Yeah, as you say, whatever level you're going to.
Yeah, I think so, but I think...
The danger, Dean, is that, for want of a better word, the mugs who recognise you and say, like, let's do him, you know, and you think, you know, is it worth the risk?
Yeah, you always get that.
You always get that idiot on the...
Yeah, of course. I mean, when I went to Worthing, 100%. I mean, you know, we played a lot of games, and, you know, you'd hear certain things in the tunnel, and... You know, it's a chance for someone to have a pop at you, of course. And, you know, I did have some horrendous challenges. but it is what it is. And, you know, the best thing, you know, most of the time that happened, I'd go and score the winner and I'd have the last laugh. But I think I know what you mean. It's more of a worry of getting an injury of such, and, you know.
Yeah, well, my friend at the Orient, Kevin Dinkinson, when he retired, and he's going back 30 years, and he had an injury and yet had to stop playing. So he immediately came over and played for my team at an amateur level. And of course, people were clocking him, you know.
He used to play. I had to take elbows out of the head.
You know, you used to say, hear the fella say, oh, I'm going to do him, and blah, blah, blah. And of course, they come in to do the challenge, and you know, you're an old pro. Kevin played hundreds of games. He could read it, what they were going to do before they did it, and just lift your foot a little bit higher.
I was just about to say that. Yeah. Sometimes you could see it coming, and by then you're
They're left on the floor, crumpled little heap, crying, and you think, well, you're an idiot. You know, the fella can read you like a book. You know?
Yeah, and, yeah. There is that element, of course, as well, I think.
But let's hope you get get back to it soon, Dean. And, you know, you're one of those guys people like to see succeed. And we hope you're back in at the coaching level that you deserve to be. And you get an owner of a club that's got a bit more dignity than Burgess Hills, by the sounds of things. But
I think
there you go.
Like I said, that's one I've got to, for
you've
me.
Got just put it in the locker.
One's got and the right one.
Yeah. Well, good luck, mate. And thanks for joining us at short notice on the Orient Hour.
No problem. Thanks, guys.
Tell them, mate. Bye now. Well, that was good to catch up with Dean, wasn't it?
Lovely. Pleased he's still up for things after all that's gone on. And obviously, like I said to him, I spoke to him in the summer. I know how enthusiastic he was at the time, but I suppose that's football, isn't it?
Yeah, it's always great to hear from Dean. He's obviously a legend of the club. And like I said to him, my era growing up was kind of Dean Cox and Kevin Lisby and David Mooney, so like it's always great to hear, and a bit of a fanboy moment for me.
Yeah, good. Now, I mean, we were just got a couple of minutes to have a chat about this, the transfer malarkey, this transfer window, and I mean, Cooper's been moved out, hasn't he?
Yeah, he's Cooper's gone back to Swansea.
Well, I mean, he was like a liability, the guy, wasn't he? Really?
I'm in two minds about him, because I think at the time when he came in and he debuted at Exeter away, and I thought he was brilliant that game. We kind of looked like we lacked a bit of steel and a bit of grit in the defence, and he come in and he sort of bossed it. And I think for the first few games he played, he played that way. And then I think obviously the last few months he became a bit of a liability with ascending off and being a bit reckless, and ultimately just undone all the good things he did. But I think when he came in at the time, he was what we needed. I just think towards the end,
a bit of muscle, but you've got to have a bit of brain with the muscle.
Maybe that's, yeah.
Do you not think, Tony?
Well, he was a right-footed centre-back, and funnily enough, we've had a succession of left-footed centre-backs. I mean, Beckles plays over on the right now a lot of the time, and he manages over there. So, obviously, you're getting yourself sent off against the team with the...
And it was a disgrace. It was a disgrace for sending off, wasn't it?
I mean, you know, it's wage bill, and you know how that game's going to go, and no amount of moaning from the fans is going to change that.
But, I mean, years ago, I think it was Hanson who came from Southend or Gillingham or Millwall or somewhere, and I can't remember his name, Dave someone, he had a card shop in Romford, and I see it full of red and yellow ones, but he did a challenge, a two-footed challenge, and it was absolutely disgraceful. It was an instant red card, and the Orient fans were booing him. And Barry Heard actually, and I know this is true, literally said to him, you know, you stay in the stiffs for the rest of your contract, or I'll just pay you up and get you out the building, and you can take whatever amount it was, and get out, basically, because you're not going to play for this club again. And he took his little payoff and went. And but, I mean, that was one of those challenges, and that was the other, you know, the match against, was it Derby? It was a shocker, wasn't it?
I mean, obviously, to get people in at this stage of the season where we are in the league, people have got to go out. So
that's one out of the way. He's toast, he's gone.
You've got the possibility of paying somebody else now, so it's where you can get somebody who can improve things.
Jaden, who do you think we're going to get in?
Oh, well, I mean, normally at this sort of time you hear rumours swirling around on social media and various places, half of them are never true. But I have not seen one link to any kind of player. I mean, we can only really discuss off of maybe what we feel we need. And I saw an article somewhere with saying that Wellens was looking at adding maybe a winger or a striker, which I think, is justified. I think a number nine would probably be what we need. We lack goal scorers.
There's one at QPR that was playing for us last year who's not getting a game at the moment. So,
Kelman,
yeah.
That's not for me, personally.
But he's Richie's type of forward, isn't he? Who runs around and shuts them down.
Yeah, we need someone who knows what the target is.
We've signed too many strikers that they might offer something, but they're not offering goals. And when you're playing up front, ultimately your job as a number nine is to score goals, and we just don't have that clinical number nine that can put the ball in the back of the net reliably.
Yeah, but it's genuine, isn't it?
Yeah. Guess what, guys? Thanks for joining us.
Right.
We're out of time. Can you believe it? That's flown by, hasn't it? Anyway, thanks for joining us, folks. We'll see you next week for another edition of the Orient Hour. Up the O's. To cheer all those on who wear the vest. Whatever challenge, whatever test. We're late and Orient from 10. We're late and Orient from 10. This is our club. We are proud. So sing it up and sing aloud. We were formed in 1881. The Clacks and Orient had so begun. The old story on it runs. We're late and Orient from E10.
on the hour across Brentwood and Billericay. This is Phoenix FM News from the Sky.